Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tafwai. Looking at the Israeli military offensives of the past 6 years, Operation Grapes of Wrath in Lebanon in 2006, Operation Cast Lead in Gaza in 2008, and now Operation Pillar of Defense in 2012. All of them, not coincidentally, initiated on the eve of national elections in Israel. Has all this been good for Israel, or has it been self-defeating? In this news analysis, we'll discuss Israel's need to be engaged in wars, how they have been defeated, and why that changes the military equation in the region, according to the Islamic Jihad movement, who thanked Iran for its military and financial support.
I know there are citizens expecting a more severe military action, and perhaps we shall need to do so. But at this time, the right thing for Israel is to use this opportunity to achieve a long-lasting ceasefire.
After spearheading an eight-day war on the besieged Gaza Strip, the Israeli Prime Minister finally announced a ceasefire. But it seems Benjamin Netanyahu's troubles have just started. He's now under fire for agreeing to the truce. A number of senior Israeli politicians have called for his resignation. They describe the truce as a defeat for Israel and have slammed Netanyahu for what they call a failure in achieving the goals of the war on Gaza. Some observers now consider the war a failed pre-election campaign for the Israeli Prime Minister. Even some Israeli MPs have described the ceasefire as an embarrassing surrender. Kadima chairman Shaul Mofaz had said Palestinian resistance movement Hamas had the upper hand in the conflict. For the first time, Iranian-designed Fajr 5 missiles fired by Palestinian fighters hit Tel Aviv and Jerusalem al-Quds.
Iran had a supportive role in arming and financing.
Six Israelis were killed and many others injured in the missile attacks by Palestinian fighters. Israel's much-flaunted Iron Dome missile system failed to intercept more than two-thirds of the retaliatory missiles. Each rocket fired by the Iron Dome cost Tel Aviv over $63,000. Each flight by an Israeli fighter jet to pound the besieged strip cost nearly $200,000. The damage caused to properties, including buildings targeted by Palestinian rockets, cost Israel billions of dollars. More than 106 Palestinians, many of them women and children, were killed and over 1,200 more injured in the Israeli attacks. Palestinians celebrated the truce as a victory for the resistance and yet another defeat for Israel.
Let's find out what our guests think about this. Let me introduce them from Stop the War Coalition. Chris Nainam joins us from London. From Al Akhbar newspaper, Omar Nashabi joins us from Beirut, and from Answer Coalition, Michael Preisner joins us from Los Angeles. Gentlemen, welcome. Chris Nainam, first to you, why has the ceasefire that has been announced between Israel and the resistance groups called a victory for Palestinian factions and a defeat for Israel?
Well, because all the talk from the Israeli government about a land invasion, about wiping out Hamas's military installations, all that proved to be an illusion. They were forced to back off. And it's also the case that the promises about opening the border crossings are a step forward for the people in Gaza. So, you know, it is the case that what this shows is Israel's isolation and growing weakness, actually, in the Middle East. And that's good news.
And if you can add to that, your reaction when you heard from the UK Foreign Minister William Hague saying that they will not back or support Israel for a ground invasion, which obviously didn't happen. One of the strongest statements to come, don't you think?
Yeah, no, it's a significant development, and it shows more than anything, I believe, it shows the West's weakness now in the region. I mean, clearly, you know, the US and the Western powers still have a massive amount of bases. They still have troops in the region. They still have designs on the region. But the balance of power has been shifted, particularly by the Arab revolutions. We're now in a situation where whatever views we may have about his exact policies, the president of the government in Egypt is actually a product of a popular movement and therefore has to take a stronger position than the previous regime in Egypt towards the Israelis. That's bad for the West. It's bad for Israel. Add to that the fact that the recent, you know, the last 10 years of wars in the Middle East have been a disaster for the Western powers, in Afghanistan as well. You have a situation where the West's influence and power is actually not as great as it was. And so there's a kind of challenge that's coming partly from the streets and partly from other powers in the region. And that means that the West can't get all its own way. And it has had to try and restrain Israel in this particular case.
Let me go to Michael Preisner. Michael Preisner, same question to you. Different Middle East 2012 compared to what it was 2008 with different players, a new Egypt. And, of course, we're seeing how this retaliatory defense posturing that took place really, in some sense, has changed the equation, hasn't it? Tell us your reflection upon that. And, of course, your reaction when the ceasefire came into effect and how I have failed to see any article that I've searched through declare this not to be a defeat for Israel.
Right. Well, I would say that it is the case that this was a defeat for Israel because they did not achieve their objectives. Now, historically, since the early 1950s, the state of Israel has been able to use just brute force and military strength through first masquerading themselves as the victim and saying that they are a victim of an unprovoked attack. And therefore must retaliate, which has always been turning reality on its head. But since the early 50s, the state of Israel has been able to use this all-out military force to seize new territory and to crush whatever groups or states or organizations are standing in the way of their complete domination in the region. And historically, this is a tactic that has worked, which is why the map of Palestine looks like it does today, essentially almost completely swallowed up by the Israeli settler state. But in 2006, with the invasion of Lebanon, and then with Operation Cast Lead in 2008 and 2009, and then again with this operation, it's proving that, you know, unleashing the full weight of the U.S.-Israeli war machine to achieve the objectives that they are seeking to achieve, only to be thwarted and ended up looking like they have lost, not being able to achieve their objectives, shows that despite all of the money that they have and all of the weaponry they have and all of the technology they have and all of the military superiority they have over the Palestinians, that it is no match for the tenacity and steadfastness and dedication and bravery of the Palestinian people. So all of the weight of the Israeli military is no match for the will to resist of people living under occupation.
Omar Nashabi, I mean, here we have the Israeli prime minister who has replaced his military secretary during this defeat. Obviously, this defeat militarily also, even though many are saying, well, Israel has much more power, is something that they have to rethink behind the scenes in terms of how they have gone into these wars. Every few years, it seems like Israel needs to be engaged. But do you think that this is going to now make the people behind the scenes in Israel rethink their strategy, which at this point is called, again, a defeat in this eight-day war that they launched on the Gaza Strip?
Yes, well, I don't think that this was just a military defeat. It was also a defeat on the intelligence level because it proved that the Israelis do not have the intelligence capacity to identify the location of the missiles and the location of the stocks, where the storage locations for these missiles. So this is an intelligence failure that is noteworthy, and I think it's going to create a shock inside the Israeli war and destruction machine. On the military level, the defeat is obvious. Shaul Mofaz himself just recognized this this morning on Israeli television and last night. And it's very clear many officers in the Israeli army are actually recognizing. They're using other words. They're not using the word defeat. They're using that they didn't reach their objectives. And that's to say that they were defeated in this. It's a defeat for the Israeli morale. It's a defeat for the morale in the Israeli army. I think to mobilize 75,000 reservists and then to call it off without achieving the objectives is really damaging for the morale of the Israeli army and the war machine. It is a defeat of in Israeli technology, like your guest so well, so accurately said from the United States, that they spent so much money on this technology, and they did this advertising, this whole story about they have a defensive shield, these rockets that they brought in, and it costed the Israeli taxpayers you know, millions and millions of dollars, and it proved to be inefficient, and there was evidence that the Palestinians had taken that into consideration, so they therefore they in some way with their limited means they were able, with the help of Iran and Hezbollah and others, they were able to identify the capacity of this defense shield and use techniques to actually be able to hit their target. Yes, the technology that's available in the hands of the Palestinians is not that advanced. It cannot hit accurate targets. However, it was able with these primitive weapons, the Palestinians were able to achieve a very important victory, and Israel suffered from a serious defeat. They're going to have to rethink things. I think that Mr. Netanyahu, his only chance to win the elections in Israel in January. Would be because there's no actual strong competitor in the Israeli political scene, not because he has achieved anything concrete for Israelis. They are the morale in the ranks of Israeli settlers and the Israeli army is very low. I think this is very important. It is time for the Palestinians to get together and form a real strong unity against the occupation.
Well, Chris Steinem, our guest Omar Nashabi talked about how the news has covered this, and one of the headlines read, the ceasefire deal represents a political victory for the Gazan factions, as Israel could not meet its threat targets, like destroying Gaza's infrastructure, because of the regional and international pressure. I'd like to get your take on what this regional and international pressure has been, because it was quite a bit this time around. Does it have anything to do with what happened last time around, when we looked at, 1,400 Gazans who were killed, of which the follow-up, there was a UN investigation that concluded Israel committed war crimes, which created a major diplomatic problem, and now this is adding more problems to what many are saying, the sympathy behind countries behind Israel? Chris Steinem, go ahead.
2006, I think it's what happened in Lebanon in 2006. I think it's what happened in Cast Lead in 2008, 2009 as well, which have exposed Israel as being the aggressor in the region. I mean, look at the opinion polls. It's quite incredible. In Britain now, the majority of people blame the Israelis for tension in the region. They blame Israelis for the problems in the Middle East, not more than Palestinians. That's a historic shift in public opinion, and it's true right across Europe. It's true in many countries around the world now. So there is an understanding of the situation which simply wasn't there 10 years ago, which I think is partly to do with the experience of 2006, 2008, 2009. But it's not just that. It's also two other things. One is, it's the experience of the Iraq war and the Afghan war, where people have learnt to disbelieve the rhetoric of the Western leaders. People have learnt to distrust what the US, what Britain and France and so forth are doing in the Middle East. So there's a deep cynicism in the West now amongst ordinary people about what our leaders are perpetrating and what their motives are in the region. That's important. The third element is the Arab revolutions themselves. These have helped to shift the balance of power in the region away from the Western allies, away from the regimes like the old Mubarak regime, the regime in Tunisia, and others. We now have a certain amount of independence being pursued by Egypt and to a lesser of lesser importance Tunisia, but also Turkey, all of which actually does mean that Israel is more isolated, that the Western powers have less room to manoeuvre in the region. So I think those three factors have come together to create a situation in which Israel is more and more isolated. By the way, though, I think it's important to say this doesn't mean Israel is less dangerous. This doesn't mean the West is less dangerous. Actually, like wounded beasts, they can hit back in these circumstances. So we need to be prepared to continue to mobilize.
The word isolation, Michael Preisner, has come time and again when we're looking at what has occurred in this eight-day war. But you're in the States. Tell us what you think in terms of what I found to be really interesting, and that was the lack of this certain personality that I would think would have been more active in holding press conferences and just seeing his face and showing an all-out support. And that's the U.S. President Barack Obama. Some called it telephone diplomacy, of which a few rounds of phone calls were made to Egypt and perhaps some other countries, not to mention, of course, Israel. But we really didn't see that sense of urgency behind Obama, just Clinton in the shuttle diplomacy between Israel, Ramallah, and then, of course, Egypt.
Right. Well, first we have to point out that this was not unilateral action carried out by the Israeli government. This was a U.S.-Israeli terror campaign against the Palestinian people. Prior to the operation being launched, just days before, the Monday before the operation started, Israeli officials were in the White House, no doubt discussing this. This operation, and it was no doubt given the green light by Washington. Otherwise, it would not have happened. So we didn't see President Obama too much, of course not denouncing it, but just saying that they are 100% behind the state of Israel. Congress passed a resolution saying that they have unwavering support for what the state of Israel is doing. But then we saw something very interesting happen. We saw Secretary of State Hillary Clinton rush to the Middle East to put the brakes on it, to try to broker a peace deal after Washington, just days before, had given the green light for it. And that's because of this new dynamic in the region that our other guests talked about. The fact that they were very scared about uprisings occurring in the region. And so the reason that it was kind of very quickly abandoned the operation, and there was a very strong effort by Washington to put a stop to it as soon as possible, is because the U.S., and this is because, you know, we saw strong, you know, the U.S. very much trying to put the brakes on it. We saw the U.K. government saying that they would not support a ground invasion. Obama saying that, urging the Israeli government not to launch a ground invasion. This is not out of care for the Palestinian people. The diplomatic pressure from these countries is not because all of a sudden they've had a moral epiphany that what's happening is wrong. It's because they are scared of uprisings in Egypt, in Jordan, and other neighboring Arab countries. They were very scared of that sleeping giant, this new superpower in the world, the will of the people rising up and uniting together and fighting against these power structures. So that is very much what they are scared of, and it's showing that these tactics of just all-out military force are having the types of repercussions that is showing that that they can't succeed with this anymore. And so it's obvious that the only real long-term solution to the conflict in the region is an end to colonial occupation, is human rights and dignity and the right of return for Palestinian refugees. Anything else is just going to lead to more conflict. And, you know, that's what the U.S. is very much scared of right now, because it's damaging imperialist interests in the entire region.
Well, let's find out, Omar Nashabi, whether that could be changed. We are having what militarily what the Islamic Jihad movement has said, that military equations have now changed, while also thanking Iran for its military and financial support with the help of course, Iranian-designed Fajr 5 and Fajr 3 missiles, not to mention the fact that not one single Arab country has donated one single bullet to the resistance factions there in Gaza. Has the military equation changed?
Yes, I think it has, and I think that every war that Israel launches against the Arabs and against Palestinians or Lebanese or Syrians or Egyptians changes the equations. And that's thanks to awareness, I believe. There's more awareness, as my friend from London just said. There's more awareness, not just in this part of the world, but also all over. And the media plays a very important role, not just the capacity on the ground. I think before I proceed, perhaps it would be adequate to explain that the assistance that is coming from Iran to the resistance is not just financial. It is also related, as you explained, to the manufacture and of these rockets. It's also related to the know-how, the training in how to launch these missiles, how to hide the storage of these missiles, and it's also smuggling parts and smuggling weapons into Gaza from the Sudanese route, I believe, that was what was identified recently in several reports. The equation has changed. However, the situation now is that all eyes are on Egypt, all eyes are on Morsi. Morsi, is the president of Egypt, has made promises to the Americans and is in a situation where he has made also promises to the Palestinians. Now, the Americans require him to protect Israel, whereas the Palestinians want him to continue to support the resistance. Now, Hamas and Hamas people know very well that that if they change course and if they decide to go in full with the agenda for creating elements that would protect the security of Israel, or agendas that would be for a long truce without reaching any advance on the justice level for the basic rights of the Palestinians, well, Hamas would lose its popularity among the Palestinians if it would decide to take that track. And that's what happened to Fatah, in fact, in the past. Fatah was the most important Palestinian movement, and when Fatah went for peaceful negotiations, and when Yasser Arafat went for peaceful negotiations, he lost, and Fatah lost a lot of its credibility among Palestinians. So Hamas has legitimacy among the Palestinians and to several Arabs all over the world, because Hamas supports the resistance. Hamas does resistance. Hamas is steadfast on the basic principles. That's what makes Hamas popular. And I hope that Hamas will continue on that line. And I hope that Mr. Morsi will not succumb to American pressure and provide more security and safety for Israel, because Israel does not provide any security or any safety for anyone in the whole region.
And finally, Chris Nainan, quickly, if you can, I think the operative metaphor that Israel often uses is described as cutting the grass, meaning a task that has to be performed in order to safeguard their security. And you said, Israel, we can't dismiss them as being dangerous, but all their policies have basically radicalized the situation, eroded the middle ground, demonstrated the impossibility of agreement. Do you think that Israel is going to rethink the strategy that it's playing in terms of its position and taking that into consideration in the region that it's in?
Well, I mean, you'd like to think so, but the problem is that I think they're locked into essentially the policy that they've been pursuing over the last few decades. They show no signs whatsoever of trying to pursue a sensible negotiations. They're not under any particular pressure, I don't think, from the US to do that. If anything, what they're trying to do is they're trying to build a kind of alliance against the what they call the Shia Shia Triangle, you know. So, I mean, I worry that actually one of the underlying motives behind this attack in the first place was to provoke Iran to create a further standoff against Iran. I think they're pushing for that. And actually, I think one of the dangers is that the point at which the Israeli and the American policies coincide, or interests coincide, is precisely over trying to change the government in Syria and trying to change the government in Iran. So, I mean, that's one of the things we've got to be very, very careful about.
Right, but Gaza is 60 kilometers. They couldn't even overtake that. Thank you very much. We're going to end it there. From South the War Coalition, Chris Nainan there from London. From Al Akhbar newspaper, Omar Nashabi. Thank you. From Beirut, and from Answer Coalition, Michael Priesner with the statements from Los Angeles. And thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Any questions or comments, feel free to send them. Newsroom@presstv.ir is our email address. From Mikoa Tafoy and the entire team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.